You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Focus on Campus, and joining us today by phone is Michelle Miller. Dr. Miller is a faculty member at Northern Arizona University, and she has done research in psychology, cognitive science, and one of the papers, books actually, that she's written is Minds Online, Teaching Effectively with Technology, and various papers, one that really stands out for me, Helping Students Memorize. And she is going to be visiting with our faculty members here on campus later today, and we're going to talk a little bit about the conference and her research. But as we mentioned before, we are taping this ahead of time. Dr. Miller, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, as I mentioned, you're a research psychologist and professor in the area of cognitive psychology, specializing on focusing on thought process such as memory, language, attention, and decision making. And that is something that we all face regardless of whether we're in academia or not.
Yes, I completely agree. And it's so wonderful to be seeing cognitive science and cognitive psychology starting to have its day in the sun, kind of getting out there in the public consciousness and more people, you know, talking about mind and brain and how that relates to our effectiveness in lots of different arenas of life.
Is this something that we learn as we grow, or is something that is the baby when the baby is born already has, it develops later?
Yes. Well, you know, that's a great question. You know, I guess cognitive psychologists and you know, myself in particular, I follow a school of thought that holds that really much of our cognitive machinery, as it were, the things in our brain that allow us to think and communicate, are adaptations to our environment, much as our physical bodies are. So, you know, as some people put it, we're walking around in the 21st century with Stone Age hunter-gatherer brains. Now, obviously, we have lots of advantages and different experiences that shape that quite profoundly as we grow up in a contemporary environment. But there's some basic commonalities that we do have. You know, there are things that are naturally easy for us to remember and things that are just very difficult for us to remember. And that big picture helps us, you know, predict which is which. That said, we can learn a lot of tricks and kind of hacks, as it were, to work with those tendencies of cognition. And teachers, as you know, can also design some of those into their courses and their course designs as well to help students learn those skills on their own and help boost their memory and their cognitive abilities within the course.
We see a lot of students, you know, students will cram right before a test, or I have this to do, I have that to do. As a faculty member, as a teacher, as a college professor, how do you bring that across to students so that they will not have to cram, so that they learn as they go?
Right. Well, you know, and you've hit on something that is one of the top findings from applied psychology that, you know, relates to course design and to learning, the so-called spacing effect or distributed practice effect. So there's just reams of research studies at this point showing not only that spacing practice out helps, we know a lot about why that is, but you're right, students' natural preference, many of them, is to fall back on, you know, oh my gosh, the test is tomorrow, I want it to be fresh, I'm going to sit down for, you know, 4 hours and try to cram it all in now. You know, some ways you can come at that as far as persuading students about why they should change their practice. You know, first off, distributing practice can actually, you know, work well for the busy student. You know, it might be very motivating for them to hear that, you know what, if you just have 30 minutes a day or even 15 while you're on the bus or transitioning from one job to the other or at your child's sports practice, that you actually get a lot out of that, little short bites of learning. So learning to go can work in favor of the busy student instead of the student who can go to the library all day long and spend that, you know, multi-hour study session.
Dr. Miller, what about applying these things to, let's say, a housewife or a parent or somebody who says, you know, I don't even know if my brain works anymore. I've done so many things, especially a housewife who is with the children all day or is at home alone, or the husband who's at home alone and does all that thing. How do you change that?
Well, I think you're right. I think, you know, boundaries are breaking down in higher learning and learning in general in society to where, it's not just the privilege of your so-called traditional student who can go for 4 years, concentrate on studying and nothing but studying, then they get out and go into quote-unquote real life. Learning is now something that, due to technology and other changes, you know, we can flow over through our whole lifespan, and we have to because, you know, homemakers, men in different professions, they are increasingly, as we all know, stepping in and out of that role throughout their lives. So, you know, what the thing that you're doing when you're 22 years old, be that caring for children or some other job, you're going to be doing something different a few years down the road. So I think we all need to have these skills to be able to do something like get into an online environment and be able to work effectively in that. So I think things like, you know, there's MOOCs, the massive open online courses that are free to join, and they're pretty stripped down, so not everybody follows through with them, but those are a great resource. And public universities, such as the ones we work within, offer all kinds of resources. So this is definitely something that I think affects all of us in society, not the just students currently in college or those of us who work directly within higher education.
Now, I mentioned the workshop currently being held here at UTEP. What are you telling faculty members as you travel across the country or speak even at your own university about cognitive learning and about memory?
Yes. Well, number one, it's important to, I try to distill out a couple of top big picture findings from the last really few decades of cognitive research. And this is what I think that I can provide as value to faculty. You know, I think there's increasing interest in bringing the research into our teaching. However, if you just hit the journals and try to discern, you know, what's important, that's very, very tough for a non-expert to do. It's tough for me as an expert to do because there's thousands of articles that come out every single year saying, you know, memory is this and learning is that. So I try to go in and pick a couple of principles that I think every teacher today should know. And then I try to translate those into, well, what does that look like if we use it as a specific design principle within our course, especially if we're going to use technology? So the spacing effect is one that I meant that we've talked about just a few minutes ago, and that's one that you can design into the course, for example, by staggering different assignments over the week. So even if your class only meets once a week, you can have students working on class preparation assignments on Monday night, on Sunday, on Tuesday. So that's something that you can build in. Also something called the testing effect. This is one of the most powerful effects that we have discovered in the study of memory, hands down. And this just says that anything that feels like a test and is like a test, a quiz, provides a better return on study time than virtually anything else you can do at that time. I mean, really. So it's better, you know, that rather than let your students just go home and highlight the textbook over and over and over, what we can do is we can set up things like quizzes ahead of time in our learning management system. And we can explain to students that, you know, you may feel kind of strange taking a test before the real test, but that will make information stick in your memory better than anything else you could do with the time. And students are busy, so they need that return on time.
Michelle, is a test a four-letter word? Is it something that may perhaps scares our students? And I know some faculty members who teach in a way where the students are learning and not really knowing that they're learning because they're having fun and they're enjoying it.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's something that we've found here at Northern Arizona University, as we've encouraged more faculty to really revamp their classes, is it requires a real change in mindset around testing and what testing is and what it's for, you know, as part of the learning process instead of, okay, now we've done all our learning and I'm coming in here to measure it. So, you know, quizzes, tests, and test-like activities can do that. But, you know, fortunately, I think that these technology tools we have can also get students into this new mindset. So, for example, you can set up quizzes where you have unlimited attempts and you can draw randomly out of a large database of questions, so you don't get the same quiz every time. And then you tell students, well, you know, not only do I allow you to take this test again, I'm encouraging you to do it. In fact, even if you have 100%, you should do it again. And then you just count the highest grade. So I think that sort of makes faculty put their money where their mouth is in showing students that a test is not always a high-stakes, do-or-die, anxiety-provoking activity. And as more and more faculty around the country are doing things like this, I think students are stepping into that new mindset as well.
There are different ways to go about teaching, as you mentioned, but one of the papers that really caught my eye that you have authored is Death of a Metaphor, Why You Should Never Talk to Faculty as if a University is a Business. That's interesting.
Oh, yes. That was so fun to write. I wrote that with my colleague and co-author, Dr. Blaise Scarnati, who also works here at NAU and is very active in faculty governance, global learning, civic engagement, and topics like that. And this grew out of just as one of those great conversations that we kept having about, you know, how it is that we can walk in and, you know, present the same idea to the same group of people and people can react to it completely differently and how that idea can be reframed. And, you know, as a cognitive psychologist, I looked at that and said, you know what, this really reminds me of this classic line of research on deep metaphors, on, you know, how metaphors are not sometimes just figures of speech, but they really reflect deep ways that we think about the world. And once we settle on a metaphor, it can kind of, you know, snap us into a new mindset, and we'd see things very, very differently. So we try to keep it light and turn it into some real practical advice, this time not for faculty, but for administrators, because we've just seen time and again how hard it is to talk to faculty in a way that opens conversation rather than shutting it down about things that, you know, we all care about. We all do care about student learning, and that's what we have in common. So in particular, this idea that, you know, oh, a university is like a business. Well, we think that you could debate all day whether that's true or not, but we argued that it was just not really as productive to have that as an opening point of dialogue.
What about faculty? A lot of us, things are changing, as you mentioned. What you learn today may not be okay tomorrow in technology. So how do we go about teaching faculty members and the old adage about teaching an old dog new tricks?
Yes. And this is one of my favorite things. And this is, you know, one of the reasons why I'm so, you know, thrilled to be at your institution talking to faculty, because it's just my favorite thing to do. You know, I think when we have dialogue with fellow faculty, one of the very important things is to come in and put to rest right away the idea that if you want students to succeed and do well, that you should water it down. You know, I think that a lot of faculty come into these discussions already very tense about that. So it's not so much that they can't learn something new. They're worried about what that means. So when you can say right off that, you know what, when we dumb things down and water things down, students don't do any better. That's in nobody's experience is that the case. It's about us taking that material and eliciting, you know, student effort, that we want students to work hard in our classes and we want them to achieve a great deal. Faculty really relax and become much more open-minded, reasonably so, when we approach it in that way. And I think you also have to have the person's discipline as you have to really respect that and have that be the starting point. So I'm not there to teach somebody, oh, here's how you should teach chemistry or literature, something that I don't know anything about. I'm not an expert in. But I can facilitate, you know, them reaching their goals and respecting, you know, their values within that discipline with some new techniques. So those things can be very, very important in, you know, all of us learning and growing as faculty.
We've been visiting with Dr. Michelle Miller. Thank you, Michelle, for being with us.
All right. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Dr. Michelle Miller is from Northern Arizona University, and she is the keynote speaker at this workshop that is being held at Bloomberg Auditorium on behalf of the College of Engineering and other organizations here on campus. Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, DJ Orozco. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Luis Sainz.